Hi, it's Mackenzie, and this is the Mill Spouse Brief. Happy Wednesday. Sorry that this is not on our normal schedule. Truthfully, on Monday, I kind of forgot until I was like, oh, well, it's a holiday. People are going to be doing stuff. We were enjoying our day. So then I was like, all right, I'll do it on Tuesday. And then Tuesday and Monday kind of like lumped together in responsibilities. And so I feel like I had a really packed day. And so I was like, well, that just totally did not get put on my checklist just because I was used to it already being posted, but then I didn't post it. So it's now Wednesday and I'm grateful that you are taking an opportunity in your day to listen. Today, Jamarcus is on the podcast with me and he is our realtor. Jamarcus is awesome. He honestly is one of the most amazing people I've ever met. He cares so much about everybody that he meets. And what I love about him is even though he's retired and he'll talk all about his military experience and his career, he just still lives so many of those values and the way you live your life as a Marine. And I just think it's super awesome. You know, when we'd show up to houses, he'd always be 15 minutes early. And I just think it's really cool, like how he has centered his lifestyle to be still of the military, even though he's not in. And I don't know, I just love the way he lives his life and how pure he is and how much he cares about the people and his clients specifically. We talk about it, but just the fact that he wasn't in it for the money and he cared so much more about when we closed the transaction that we were loving the house that we were living in, not that he was getting a paycheck. And so I'm just really grateful that he came into our lives. I feel like I go to him for a lot, whether it's the house or the military. And I'm grateful that he has become part of our lives and is like family. He's like an older brother. I feel like we call him all the time. He's probably like, oh, Mackenzie's calling me again. But I feel like I'm just grateful that I have this resource in my life that knows so much more than I do that I can call him. The other day I like got this thing in the mail and I was like, is this a scam? Like, is this real? Do I have to pay this? And so I'm really grateful that he took the time out of his day to come on the podcast and talk all about military and becoming a realtor and as a first-time home buyer or just a home buyer in general, what you should look for and what you should do. I always am grateful to experience different things, and buying a home was honestly one of the best experiences, but it would not have been the experience it was without Jamarcus. And so I am eternally grateful that this happened and that I was able to buy our house and be able to be in it before I leave. And I know that it's going to be a great opportunity in the future and an investment for Kate and I. And without further ado, here is Jamarcus. All right, so I'm here with Jamarcus. Jamarcus, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Jamarcus Tate. Born and raised in Mobile, Alabama. Went off to South Central LA for a little bit of high school. And
LA?
Yeah, South Central LA.
LA.
Yeah.
What brought you out here?
My dad took a job at Long Beach Naval Shipyard.
Oh.
And he was working there until they closed down, and then the family had to make a decision. And there was like a family meeting, like, what are we going to do? And we was like, go back to Alabama. And we went back to Alabama. And that's where I got bit by the Marine Corps bug, and I was obsessed with becoming a Marine. And I joined in 2000, and I recently retired in 2020. 2000? Yes,
21. I was 1 year old.
I'm sorry to hear that.
No, I think it's funny. So I feel like if you joined in 2000, that was right before 9/11.
Correct.
So were you done with training by the time 9/11 happened, or were you like at boot camp?
No, I was actually right at 1 year into the fleet, and I was sitting in dental. I was at dental waiting to get my teeth cleaned, and I saw everybody staring up at the TV, and I'm like, what is going on? Everybody was like, you know, you can hear a pin drop. Everybody was still.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what's going on? What's going on? They're like, turn it up. And it was just like in the movie. They're like, hey, turn that up.
Yeah.
And the dental assistant came out, turned the TV up, and all the Marines were sitting there. And because of the unit I was with, I was like,
wait, what unit? Like, where were you?
I was at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. Okay. I was part of Combat Engineer Battalion. And I was like, we talk about weapons of mass destruction. And I just knew that we was going to go to war. And by me being part of the division at that point, I knew like, okay, this is about to happen. Of course, you know, I don't care who you are. Like, this is the first time we've been in conflict, in large scale conflict in years.
Yeah.
And I was nervous. I was nervous, but I just relied on the training, the leadership we had, and that kind of put my mind at ease. And I just had a kid who was born in 2000, So I knew I was about to be leaving my family shortly. I knew I was about to be involved in worldwide conflict. And it was no secret. It wasn't like they kept on the hush. They like let you know, like, all right, we're going somewhere, guys. No, yeah. Don't know when, don't know exactly where, but we are going, you know, to the Middle East pretty soon.
So you, I mean, like, you had, like, by the time you got in and you were done with your training and you were at the fleet, it happened.
It happened. Yeah, right away. So pretty much my whole career, from the beginning of my career until right at the tail end, we have been in conflict.
Yeah. So what made you want to join before? Because if not, like, 9/11 hadn't happened by the time you joined. So what was, like, the main reason you joined the Marine Corps?
I joined for the reasons that most people in my era joined before conflict. It wasn't because of, you know, I want to go get some, I want to go to war, you know, you hear stories, stuff like that. It was mainly because I want to provide a better life for my family. I moved out of my parents' house when I was in the 10th grade. So I had my own apartment, own car. And
how did you do that?
Yeah, I know. It definitely was a struggle. It was just, I was in a situation where I feel like that was the best thing for me at that point. You know, guy meet girl, guy fall in love. Grandmother catches girl in house, gave guy ultimatum. She leave or you both leave. And of course, I was in love. I'm like, well, we're going to go and do it ourselves. And everybody was concerned, you know, like, oh, this guy's in the 10th grade, you know, he's going to drop out of high school. But I always kept my eye on the prize. Like, there was more for me outside of the county lines of Pritchard, Alabama, which is inside of Mobile County. I knew there was more out there. I watched TV, you know, the internet just had came, you know, user friendly for my community. So I was like, there's more out there. So I just started thinking about, like, do my parents have money for school? No. Do my parents have money to help me go off to, you know, a neighboring state and start a life? No. And so I thought the military was a great way of boosting my economic status and providing for my child, who I knew I had a child. Before I left the boot camp, I knew I had a child coming. She was 6 months pregnant. I'm like, I need
to.
So
she gave birth while you were at boot camp?
I got back 6 days shy.
Oh my gosh. So, like, during your 10-day leave?
My 10-day leave, she gave birth. Oh my goodness. A lot of people was like, why are you going to leave her? Why, you know, at 6 months, like, you know, you it's a good chance you're not going to be back. Why would you do that? But I refuse to have my child come to this world and me not just have a plan to better his life, but be in the process of that plan to better his life. So I'm like, I'm leaving now. So my son opens his eyes for the first time, it won't be in this house that was afforded by a guy in the 10th grade. It's going to be in a better environment if he
and
needs.
And this is little Jamarcus, right?
It's little Jamarcus. Jamarcus Jr. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Okay, so you joined the Marine Corps and you've been in for, you retired at 21?
21, yeah, right at 21 years.
Wow. So retired as a first sergeant, correct, which is amazing.
Thank you.
What would you say was, like, your best part about being in the Marine Corps? Like, your favorite thing? Or is there, like, a memory that, like, you always go back to, or just something about the Marine Corps that you're like, I'm so glad I dedicated 21 years of my life to this?
There was a plethora of memories that have shaped my future for the better, even though I didn't know at the time. But all those memories can be, you know, put into one arena, which is helping people, you know, leading young Marines and, you know, giving something to somebody, whether they knew they needed it or not, and them taking what you gave them and flourishing from it.
Yeah.
And not only that, receiving things from others, you know, from different walks of life. You know, for example, in Afghanistan 2011, we was doing a convoy to deliver supplies, and our convoy had been hit by small on fire IEDs to Galore. We actually got stuck in a minefield. It was like one truck or another just kept getting blown up because they was doing what they would do was just, you know, put IEDs at your truck and put one on the side. So everywhere we went, we was hitting IEDs. When we try to rescue that vehicle, we would hit another IED. So they, you know, higher command came across and just pretty much said, like, stand in place. Are we gonna send some route clearance guys out there to pave a way for you guys so you can drive out safely? But we were stuck there for 4 days. Just in our vehicles, just surviving off of whatever food we had. And in that experience, I remember this because, you know, I gained from it today. I listened to all the music that was on my iPod, you know, and I reached over to, you know, one of my guys. I forget where he's from. I think he's from Montana, but he was, you know, a country guy. So I'm like, man, I've listened to my whole playlist. Let me see your music. And he gave it to me. The first song was on, like, Garth Brooks. And I'm like, I think I might like country, you know? Like, country ain't that bad. So, since then, you know, I became a Tim McGraw, Garth Brooks fan, you know, so Luke Perry, I think his name is. Luke Bryan, yeah. I'm a fan, not an expert. But I realized I like country music. And so I realized, like, you know what? I'm glad that I'm in the Marine Corps because it's a melting pot. And you get to learn from different walks of life, different cultures, different religion, background, economic status. You get to learn from all walks of life. And I learned more, definitely at my 4-year mark, I had learned more about being an adult in life in those first 4 years than I had in my entire, you know, childhood growing up, you know.
Was there a moment in your life when, so you hit your 4 years and you have to decide, you know, like, am I going to do another 4? Am I going to do the 20? What was your biggest, I mean, besides, like, the retirement paycheck, was there another, like, reason where you're like, no, I think I'm really going to, like, stay in? And, you know, like, a lot of people do the 4 years and get out.
Right.
Kate included. You know, it's common, you know, to, like, get to the 8 and the 12 is, it slowly gets less common, you know? So, like, what was your mindset of like, hey, no, I'm going to do more than 4. I'm going to stay in. And then all of a sudden you're like, hey, I'm going to do the 20.
Yeah. So the first year I was very motivated about being a Marine. The first 6 months, because, you know, you're going through recruit training, everything is structured, you just do what you're told, you know, and so there was really no thinking involved for the most part. And then once you hit the fleet, and then that's when you, you know, pretty much, you know, adult in the Marine Corps or whatever. But I was so inexperienced, of course, you would have to start from the bottom. I was an E3 at that time, and they were like, hey, we need a detail to take out the trash. You know, I already know, like, my name was going to be in that pot. So I'm taking out the trash, I'm mopping the floor, you know, when we get done working for that evening. I'm doing all the details that no one really wanted to do. Fire watches, duties. So I'm doing all that jazz, and I'm like, I'm not doing this.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a grown man. I have a child. I did all these things before I joined the Marine Corps. I'm gonna go out and get me a job in the civilian world. And then one day I started thinking about the pros and cons, and what I realized, regardless of where you go in life, someone's gonna be telling you what to do. Someone, you're going to have a boss, you're going to have a supervisor. Even if when you become an entrepreneur, you know, you got Uncle Sam saying, hey, look, do what you want to do, but I'm going to need my cut. And I remember we did some training for AP Hill. And I consider myself to be one of those guys who earned my pay every day. I drove home, and on that drive home, I would ask, Jamarcus, did you earn your pay today? And if that answer was no, then I would come back the next day and I would go harder.
Yeah.
And make the day go by faster. But we was in 4 AP Hill, and you know, I was one of the head E3s, Lance Corporal. So all the NCOs would come and like, hey, you know, grab a detail and go do this. So they would always come to me and I would go, hey, y'all, let's go get this done. Disseminate the word. And then that night, they was making a fire watch roster. And I go to them, you know, these are my peers, but they're, you know, corporals. Yeah. So I go to them like, why is my name on this fire watch roster? They was like, because it's your turn. I'm like, what do you mean it's my turn? They said, because we stood fire watch when we were E3. These are the dues you have to pay. And then I'm like, you know what? It's not that I'm getting picked on or anything like that. It's just, it's my turn to do these entry-level stuff, which builds character and allows you to become a better leader, because now you understand firsthand what the people below you. So at the 4-year mark, I don't remember making like, I'm going to stay in. I just remember on top of a 7-ton truck with my right hand up saying, I'm going to do 4 more years. I'm just like, what just happened? But over time, what I realized was this is part of life. This is part of life of starting from the bottom and working your way up and going through the grunt work to get to where now I can start using my mind to influence other in leadership. So,
or you're just a first sergeant and you don't have to stand duty anymore.
That part too. And once I made that decision of doing 4, it was just like, if I'm going to do any, I will always say, if I'm going to do anything over 4, I'm going to go to 20, because at that point, you know, you get a paycheck. And not only that, if you enjoy it, keep doing it. Because if you don't enjoy it, don't do it for the paycheck, because you're just a detriment to the people around you. Mm-hmm. But if you do 4 years, you might as well do 16 more and retire at age 39, and you're still young enough to go out and do other stuff. And I just remember my dad, because my last job before I joined the Marine Corps, I was working with my dad. Mm-hmm. And at that point, he was like 45. And I'm like, he can't take a break.
Yeah.
He has to keep working. So at least if I get to retirement, I can have enough income to keep the lights on, and then I'll be young enough to still go market myself
for other jobs.
Exactly. Facts.
Which is what you're doing now.
What I'm doing now.
Okay, so what made you decide, hey, I'm gonna do real estate?
You know, the reason why I'm going to do real estate, because I think owning property is one of the main assets that blue collar workers can obtain to build wealth for the present and as well as generational wealth.
Yeah.
And I went 20 years of taking my housing allowance and paying my landlords in all these different places I've lived in the world, and they had to play the whole time. They knew the blueprint to become successful, and they was using the benefits that I was earning through the Marine Corps to achieve that. So yeah.
And like, military doesn't honestly get paid that much when you look at like paychecks,
right?
But BAH, I mean, it's a huge amount of money, specifically in California.
Correct.
That you get paid, that's not tax, that goes directly to your house. And when you're paying back a base, like,
yeah.
What the heck?
Yeah.
And you're paying back a base who they're going to be paying either the same money or less money for the same amount of house.
Facts. So.
With a bunch of crazy rules.
Bunch of crazy rules.
And awful barking dogs.
That part. Yeah.
And.
Yeah. Yeah. All of that. So I said, you know what? I want to educate every service member about what using their benefits to their advantage. At my 20 year mark, I'm like, I stopped and I think, you know, you have that moment, like after 20 years of serving this country, what do I have to show for? At that point, I was close to my bachelor's. I'm like, okay, that's good. I looked at my savings account. I'm like, not what I want, but it's a decent start, you know? And then I said, the biggest thing I don't have is property. And I talked to a guy, his name is Brent, who owned several properties from like when he was 83 and bought like a crappy property. And then he just magnified that and used the equity from that to keep building upon that and diversifying his portfolio from different properties. He told me, he said, the best time to buy a house was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, that sucks because I'm awesome, but I'm not awesome enough to change time. And he said, the next best time is now. Not because of the market. He just said now because pretty much saying it's not too late for you to accomplish your goals of ownership.
Yeah.
So I purchased our first house back in 2000.
That is so exciting.
And then I'm like, I want to help other people do the same.
Yeah. Okay. And then let's talk about the Warrior Group because that's like how we met you.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you get involved with the Warrior Group? And what is the Warrior Group?
So I'm going to start off with, what is the Warrior Group? The Warrior Group is founded by Maurice Watkins. He is a veteran, retired as a first sergeant, and he wanted to start a brokerage that catered to and specialized in helping service members and veterans, you know, find properties that they desire.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much in a nutshell what it is. I met Maurice Watkins. We both was faculty advisor at the Marine Corps University on Camp Pendleton.
There's a Marine Corps University?
Yes, EPME, Marine Corps University, also commonly known as Sergeant's Course, Career Course, Advanced Course. Whenever you get promoted, then you have to go through a five to seven week course that really peel back the layers of leadership.
That's cool.
And send those individuals back out to their units with a better understanding of what is expected of them from that leadership standpoint. Every cycle class, we would have 125 students. So I met him there. We was, you know, pumping out cycles after cycle, teaching them everything from war fighting to leadership to physical fitness to, you know, constructive writing, communication skills. Then we would push him back out. So I met him there, and I really liked his drive. And then he got promoted. He went off. And then he started the Warriors Group.
Mm-hmm. And it's out of Temecula, right?
It's out of Temecula. Right, right. It's out of Temecula, California. He started the group. And when I went to go buy my house, I was so naive. I'm like, I'm not going to get an agent because I don't want to pay an agent. I could do this myself. It's a new bill. How hard can it be? And I walked in. Me and my wife, we was there. And we was about to sign the purchase agreement. And they threw this huge, you know, stack of papers in front of us. I'm like, I am so lost. I went through like the first two pages. And I was like, I'm out of my element. Let me phone a friend. So I called Maurice up and he was like, one mistake. You should have called me before you did this. second one is step outside so I can tell you what you need to be seeing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and third mistake, you don't have to pay an agent.
Third mistake is thinking that I had to directly pay an agent. So he pretty much gave me the information to walk back in there and really aggravate the salesman there because I walked back in and said, I want my HOA dues paid for a year, 20 grand off the property, and I want 7 grand and upgrades on the house. And then she was like, well, I don't know if I can do this. And I'm like, Maurice, what can I say? You like, you know, you like poker face. And so I'm like, well, if you can't do it, then maybe we'll go to a different property. The climate was different from the current real estate market, yeah. So you can say stuff like that because it was a buyer's market then.
It is not a buyer's market.
Definitely not. You try to say something like that, and they're gonna be like, "Let me stop you right there on HOA dues paid negative next." But I walked back in after she went back and forth with her boss. They came back and they gave us all those things. I'm like, "That's the broker I want to work for. Yeah. That's my mentor. That's who I want to learn from."
So how long did it take for you to become a real estate agent? Like the schooling?
The schooling is, State of California requires that you do 3 different modules, 45 hours each. Okay. So that can take, you know, it's kind of self-paced, but they do put some parameters around it where you can't start, you have to wait 18 days to start a different module. So I would start a module and I would try to bang it out in those 18 days and then start within those 18 days and then be ready for the next module. So that took me, and I wasn't going, you know, I would take a little time off. So that took me about 3 months to get through the modules. And then you have to schedule for the test. Schedule for the test can take a while. Mine was like three months out. And then of course I got back in the books a week out and I took the exam, passed it. And then we met.
That's so cool. And so you've been a real estate agent since 2021?
Correct.
When did you pass your test?
It was August? August of 2021.
And then September, you come and see Cade at his Corporals course.
Yeah.
Which was so crazy. So a little backstory. Cade was on Corporals course and you guys came, I think, on like a Thursday.
Okay.
And everybody listening probably knows all about Cade, but like he's shyer, he's quiet, and like if you don't have his attention, it's like in one ear, out the other. You know, like getting him to like pay attention to something that he's like not interested in, or if it's just like a course, like I'd be like, "Hey, what'd you learn today?" "Oh, some stuff," you know? So I drive over there and I was really struggling because like everyone knows, like we were waiting to hear about the Navy. We didn't know what to do. We didn't know where Cade was going to live if I did get in. You know, we were getting ready to be done with California, like all this kind of stuff. And I've been praying for weeks to try and figure out what we should do. And we've always talked about wanting to buy a house, but it was like always next place. Like the next place we go to, you know, kind of like, I like you said, like you never feel ready. Specifically right. As a first time home buyer, like I was like, we're 22 years old. We are not ready to buy a house. He gets in the car because I was in Pulgas I had like a therapy session. And so he gets in the car, like we like normally had lunch together, and he's like, "We need to buy a house." And I was like, "Excuse you? Like what?" And he's like, "Yeah, we need to buy a house." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And for like 15 minutes, he like says back everything that you taught him in that class. He's like, "So I met this guy and he said this and he did this and he says we can do this and he says we can do that. And I signed up to like go meet him." And I'm like, "Who are you? What did he go with my husband?" Like, I was like, "Cade, what?" And so like every question I asked him, he had an answer. And I was like, "Oh, you paid attention."
Yeah.
He's like, "Yeah." And then you called that night. So we get home and I'm like, my head is like spinning. I'm like, a house? Buying a house? Like, what is going on? And you call and you're like, "Hey, I really want to meet you guys, but I really want to make sure your wife can come." And like, I really appreciate that you were like, this is a you decision. You know, I feel like a lot of time in the military, but just like in general, like a lot of times they'll just say like the guy makes the decisions right. And the girl follows along, which is really funny because our relationship is very different. Like I remember when Kid and I were getting married, his first sergeant came up to him and was like, "Culver, like you're getting married soon, right?" And he's like, "Yes, sir, like next weekend." And he was like, "So like you got everything figured out?" And he was like, "No." And he was like, "What do you mean?" And he's like, "She's got it all taken care of." And he was like, "You're the man, like you need to do that." And he's like, "Okay, first sergeant." He's like, "I don't think you know her, like she's got it." Like,
yeah.
I wear the pants that she tells me to put on. Like, we're good for a But it was really funny. And so we ended up going and meeting you, I think, like 2 days later.
Right.
Which was crazy. And I remember, like, just it always still feeling so good. Like, I was kind of shocked because I was like, this is such a new and exciting thing that I feel, like, so far, like, not like, I just felt like so clueless about it. You know, I was just like, we're doing all these things that I felt so clueless about, but you like had every single answer to every question. And it was just really cool to like see how much you knew. And then you'd be like, "Yeah, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And this and that." And like your negotiation skills were amazing. I was like, "Oh my God, like I'm never playing poker with Jamarcus."
No, definitely not. I'll say that out of all the clients I've had, I say that dealing with you and your husband made my job easy because it kept me honest. You know what I mean? It kept an honest man honest, where you did a lot of research. And I like somebody who is in the fight with me. You know, you have some clients, they don't know what they want. That makes your job a lot easier. So you bring in all these different shades of color and they're like, not that one, not that one, not that one. I'm like, well, you don't know what color. Like, get me in the arena and then I'll come up with a shade. Okay, you want brown. All right, cool. Here's 10 shades of brown, which one you want. Yeah. But, you know, some people, they just had no idea what they wanted. And you presented these things in front of them, these different products. And they was like, not that one, not that one, not that one. Well, you know.
Which one?
Which tell me something to build from. Give me a foundation. But with you and your husband, you guys know what you want. And I like the way that, you know, we was on the same page when I was like, hey, that's too much. You guys agree. Like, oh, yeah, that is too much.
Well, what I really liked was, and we'll have you expand upon this in a second, but, like, you cared so much about us and our house versus your paycheck and, like, saying goodbye to us. You know, right. Like, when we would go look at houses, I remember that first house we ever looked at, and I was like, oh, my gosh. And I was like, and you walked up, and you're like, it's not it. I mean, we can go in. And then I think you had another client that wanted to see it. So right. Like, we need to go in so I can tell this other client that this is not the house for them.
Right.
But you never walked into a house, and you were like, you always said, if I would not live in it, I won't want to sell it to you.
Right.
Because I don't want you to close this deal and then be like, man, what did I get left with?
Right, right. So the main reason why that was important to me is, one, you know, there are some agents out there, you know, and this is no knock on anyone, who real estate is the only source of income.
Yeah.
But because of 20 years of active duty and I was able to retire, I have income. So it allows me to keep my morals and my principles intact. So when I walk on a property, I envision myself and my own family in this property, and if I wouldn't put my child or my wife in that community, I wouldn't want to have one of my clients. And now we could just go on to the next. I've had clients who, you know, here recently I had a client who they're about to have a baby at the end of the month. They want to buy a property in Hemet, which was going to be a
East California.
It was going to be a 2.5 hour to 3 hour commute. We saw the property on a Saturday, no traffic. We breezed right through. It was an hour. Hour and 10 minutes.
On a Saturday.
It was just no traffic that day. It was early in the morning. I think we had to be there at 10, so I had to leave like at 8:15. But there was no traffic. But they was going to make a deal, an offer on it. And the offer they wanted to make, after I ran the comps and verified that was a good offer, they was going to get that property.
Yeah.
But I have to tell this young couple who was about to have a child.
And have another. They already have a kid.
No, they don't have anything. That was going to be there first. So really, that was going to be even more stressful because they don't know what they're doing. So I'm like, look here. You know, just think 6 months down the road. The child is going to keep you up at night. You got to get up in the morning at 4 o'clock a.m. to get to work down in San Diego. Then you got to fight through the traffic to get back.
Coming back is awful.
And then you can think about childcare and meeting those timelines. I said, look here. If you guys, you're grown men, you're grown women. So if you guys want to do this, by all means, but I strongly suggest we don't. I strongly suggest we start looking, you know, elsewhere. We can go back to the lender and try to get you guys more buying power. So we, you know, going back and forth with the lender, got them a little bit more buying power. And at the end, they decided, you know, 2 months of searching, they just said, you know, we're not going to buy right now. And to me, I don't have any regrets of talking them out of that first property. Yes, I would have got a check out of the deal. But two, at what cost? At what cost? So I'm glad, you know.
Knowing that your customer is, like, dying, trying to have a newborn. Right. His commute.
Yeah, exactly. So I enjoy what I'm doing. I love when people, you know, I love coming to people's house when we saw it, you know, other people's furniture inside, or if it was a blank canvas and it was empty. I love coming back, you know, a few months down the road and see what type of, you know, their personality into the property. So that's another drug of mine.
What would you say are some of your, like, tips for home buyers? Like, any, whether it's first time home buyers or just anybody buying a home, what are some things that you think are, like, really important to know or to, like, understand when going into the process?
Okay. The first thing I would tell you is protect your credit. Just like it's your honor or your integrity. Protect your credit. Put your bills on auto pay so you don't have, like, late dues. You know, learn about, you know, become more financial literate so you can have the invisible money, which is credit, because that's what most of the world is moving with your credit. And when you think your credit score is good, which is the safe spot, is about a 6, any lender for the most part about 650 and up is what lenders require. The VA don't have any requirements when it comes to credit score, but most of your lenders will have 650 or higher. And of course, the better your credit is, then the better interest rate you're going to receive. The next thing is, you know, because that's very early in the game, the next thing is find you an agent. Don't go at this alone. Trust me, it's going to make your life a lot easier.
And Jamarcus is the best agent. You want him.
Oh, I didn't pay her to say that. But get you a good real estate agent.
Okay, so real quick, mm-hmm. What makes a good real estate agent?
Honesty is one.
Yeah.
Someone who always going to have your best interest at heart and put your best interest above their you know monetary gains.
Yeah.
Two, I would say someone who is eager to continue to learn. Mm-hmm. Someone who's humble when they don't know something about a particular situation, who have the resources and the bridges to reach out and call somebody like, hey, look, I just ran into this with my client. Hey.
Which happened multiple times with us.
Yeah.
You know, you'd be like, hey, I want to like check on this answer. Like, I don't want to tell you something if I don't know. Let me just call Maurice real quick and I'll call you right back. And like 10 minutes later, you had the correct answer. You didn't have to like second guess laying in bed at night if you told me the right thing.
Right, right. I live by that rule. If you don't know something, don't just throw something up against the wall hoping it's going to stick. Because you run the ultimate risk of losing credibility and possibly losing your client because you just decided, you know what, it's worth more of me to, you know, shoot something up against the wall rather than just say, hold on, that's a good question. Let me get back with you. Let me do some research. Hold on. Give me 30 minutes. Give me 10 minutes. So those are the main things. And someone like me, I refuse to take on more than 3 clients because if you really... For, you know, have an agent who have all those first few things I just named. If they have 6-7 clients at a time, someone's going to be losing. Something's going to lose. Either your family time with your own family, or one of those particular families is not going to get something that they need. And you can only be at one place at one given time. And most of your clients will want to see houses around the same time. So if you take on 3 clients and then you just give them your best that you got and don't take on any more. You know, that's also part of being on a team. If you got way more clients that you can handle, just push one over to another member of your team.
That's smart. Yeah. I think another green flag or something you need to check is to make sure that your real estate agent drives an Audi, because every real estate agent I've seen drives an Audi. And it was our joke. Every time we like would pull up somewhere and I'd be like, oh, that's our real estate agent.
Yeah. It's easy to zip in and out of traffic when it's built by some, well built. Just say that.
Okay. So when it comes to being a homeowner, like first-time buyers, what are things that the buyer needs to prepare besides the credit? Like, mm-hmm. What are some other things that they need to be aware of and looking for when they go to want to buy a house?
I would say, again, credit. Secondly, you need to have money.
Yeah.
You need to have some cash on hand because most of your sellers are going to want you to have proof of funds. Just to show that, hey, I'm a serious buyer, you're going to have to put down an earnest deposit that can be anywhere between $1,000 to $10,000.
To $20,000. It's like normally, what, a percentage of your sale price? Or sometimes it's both, right?
Where in California, most of the time, it is right at 1%.
Okay.
The deal that we did with Tiffany and her husband, Aaron, they wanted 3%.
Yeah.
Which came out to be 18 grand.
Which is a lot.
I mean, you're going to get that back, or you can put it and make it go towards your closing costs, but you still got to have that cash on hand.
And it's just going to sit for 30 days.
It's going to sit for 30 days. Or exactly. So I would say have that money put to the side and ready to go. I would say anywhere between 10 to 20,000 is doable.
Yeah.
Secondly, I would tell any client to make sure, of course, while you're in the escrow process, make sure necessities, line of credit, stuff that you need is already done. Because once you go to escrow, you shouldn't be trying to get new lines of credit. So make sure things that you need for your current situation has already been, you know, taken care of.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to people buying, you know, you talked about how, like, Kate and I had an idea about what we wanted. But, you know, at the same time, I think, like, from where we first started to where we ended up was, you know, it always mm-hmm. changes. So how many, like, must-haves would you say that you need, and how many, like, things that are negotiable? You know, like, is it bedrooms and bathrooms? Or but like, so it, even that I feel like is negotiable. So like, are there things that you feel like, okay, you know, that like for us was like having a washer and dryer. Like I wasn't going to do a communal area.
Right.
So that was like one of our must haves. So like as an agent, how many must haves do you want a buyer to come with? And how many things do they need to be like negotiable about?
So I would say this, a washer and dryer, something like a situation like that. Like some people like, well, if I can have a washer and dryer, I'm not buying a house, period. But it's all dependent upon your buying power. If you have a low buying power, you can come with all these must have, but you need to be a realist and understand because of your low buying power, you may not have the flexibility of 40 houses.
Yeah.
Low buying power, you may have the flexibility of 3 houses. And then you look at that particular, those particular 3 houses and be like, even though they don't have everything I want, is it something that we'll still feel happy with coming home to every day? And if that answer is yes, then you go ahead and you pull the trigger and you know, go into contract. If that answer is no, then you continue to look, or you put the home buying process on hold temporarily in order for you to build up your buying power. Maybe you pay off a little debt so you can go back to the lender and say, hey, I got rid of some debt. My debt to income ratio has changed for the better. Now I want to see about getting a little bit more money. Or you can say, you know what? Let me just try a different lender. Let me maybe lender B will give me more than lender A in the exact same situation that I'm in right now for his credit and debt to income ratio. So I think, again, to recap all that is all dependent upon your buying power. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it's not right for you, just put it on pause.
Going towards the lender talk, mm-hmm. as somebody that wants to buy a house or first time buyers, is it better to go through the lenders that your agent works with, or mm-hmm. to be like, hey, I have this guy over here that said he would talk to me?
For us, the word better, which is, you know, somewhat opinionated. One, I would start off by saying a buyer has the right to choose any lender they want. From my professional experience, it's better to go with the lender that the buyer, that your agent has recommended, mainly for these reasons. The agent, at the end of the day, his loyalty is to you, not to that lender. So therefore, when he's talking to that lender and vetting them out, he's asking them questions such as, what is the best interest rate you can give right now? And that agent should come to the table with knowing what the interest rates are. So when that lender who he's interviewing for to start sending him clients as preferred lender, he can know, like, is this straight?
Because the lender needs agents to, like, send them clients.
Send them clients. You know, for the most part. It's just another way of getting traffic in and out of the door. And you want to ask, hey, what does your closing time look like? You know, is your underwriter in-house? Do you, are you available at all times of day and night? Because my client may have a question. And if it's something that's on the lender side, I may not be able to answer it. So I need to know that you're available. And if that is the case, you just did a lot of work for your client by having one or two, maybe three lenders that, hey, choose out of these three, I've already vetted them out.
What would you say? Because, like, I know that we never even looked at this when we were buying our house, going with a lender versus, like, a straight bank, like saying, like, hey, Navy Fed, I want a house loan. What would you say are the benefits of going with a lender versus going straight to, like, a bank for a loan for a house or for a mortgage?
So I think you talk about the difference between going with a loan broker and a direct lender.
Maybe that's what
No worries. So a loan broker is going to be a person who sits there, they type in your information on the computer, and they throw it out to the world. And maybe 15 institutions comes back and say, hey, this is what we can do, this is what we can do. And then that broker will see what the best one is. Sometimes that works to the.
That's not what we did, correct?
That's not what we did. Okay. Sometimes that works to the client's advantage because they can shop around. They're pretty much shopping your stuff around and making people compete. However, it can be a double-edged sword because now that middle person got to make some money. That loan broker got to make some money. So if you find a direct lender who can compete with shopping around prices, but from one bank, because you're a direct lender, he's a mortgage, a loan officer, and he only pulled money from that one source.
Yeah.
If they have really good attractive rates that can beat this side, then beat the loan broker, then it's beneficial for you to go with the direct lender.
Interesting.
Yeah, but sometimes it don't work that way. So the rule of thumb is to get a loan estimate and just shop it around. Like, hey, this is what Bank A gave me. Bank B, can you beat this? Whether it's direct lender or loan broker.
Okay. That's interesting. Okay, that's good to know. when you want to buy a house, talk about the warranty that we did.
Okay.
And like the benefit of that.
So it's just a peace of mind. It's an insurance, just in case you need it. In your case, you absolutely did need it. You know, and one, you got to think about a few different things. If the house is, you know, not a new build, a new build is going to come with 1 year warranty from the manufacturer, okay, from the builder. After that, if appliances go left, then the owner is responsible for paying that. That can be $1,000. That can be $5,000, depending upon what it is. But when you give a when you get a home warranty, it just gives everybody a peace of mind. You know, your hot water tank went out. You paid $75, but I guarantee if you didn't have the home warranty, which cost almost $750 for the year,
and we had the sellers pay that,
That was part of the negotiation. They had, you know, stuff around the house that needed to get fixed. We submitted the addendum, said, hey, look, fix this stuff, and or give us a home warranty. So they went with, hey, we'll just pay for your home warranty, which is beneficial for you. So I think a home warranty is definitely needed for either primary resident or investment properties. It just gives you the peace of mind of when things break, because they will. Everything's built by man, and they will break eventually. Then you, instead of coming out of pocket, you know, thousands upon thousands of bucks, you pay a copay and then let some professionals come in and get it done.
Yeah, and the cool thing about the home warranty that we have, so like you submit the work order online whenever, and the minute you submit the work order, it tells you the company that they already have coming out to you. And so it's so quick. You don't have to go vet a company. Like, they've done all of that.
Yeah.
And so that is also a nice peace of mind where, like, yeah, you know if things are going to break within this next year. And I feel like it's literally Murphy's Law. Like, the day we moved in, our hot water heater didn't work, so we're like down in the garage at 9:30, like calling Jamarcus, like, do you know anything about water heaters? And like trying to figure it out. And so it is really nice to know that like we have that peace of mind for the next year. I was talking to a friend who just bought a house, and she's like, oh yeah, we use the crap out of ours. She's like, something broke and they were like, you're not renewing it. Like, you have used so much of our
money. Wow.
Like, that's like, she's like, it's so nice though.
Yeah.
But I was like, as a first time home buyer, I had no idea that was even like a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I recommend, even if it is a newer property, you know, built within the last year or a little bit over a year, I think if you buy a resale, you absolutely should either negotiate it in the deal for the seller to pay for it, or you just pay for it for yourself. Yeah, because it's better. It's, you know, insurance.
All right, next, let's talk about the things that, so like when we went and looked at houses, there were a lot of things that you would take a look at as the real estate agent that Kate and I, like over our head, we were just like, oh, look at this. You know, like you're kind of just overwhelmed. So talk about the things that really need to be checked out when you go into looking at a house that your mind won't think of when you first walk in, but while you're using your house 3 weeks later when it closes, you're like, crap, why did I not look
at this? Right. So the rule of thumb, what I always tell my clients, when you go in this house, I want you to, you know, see where your sofa is going to go and see if this house is a good fit for you, where it's open plan or not. See if you're going to have to heavily modify this house to fit your needs. And if the answer is no, you don't have to heavily modify it. You know, start envisioning yourself and your family in here, in the backyard, in the living room. While you doing that as the buyer, what I'm going to be doing is looking for structural damage. I'm going to be looking for discolorations in the ceiling. I'm going to be looking for the signs of like electrical damage or water damage, or if the house has been flooded a couple of times. So I'm going to be looking for that. And not only that, because I'm not a professional home inspector, we've already on our team, we have 2 to 3 home inspectors that are ready to come in. It's a small fee, but it's definitely worth it. Because
it's so worth it.
And this guy is going to do way more to protect your interest than you and I can, because he or she is trained at, you know, making sure this is a sound investment. Because that's what a property is. It's a home, but it's also an investment. So $250, he come in, he go through the crawl spaces under, also an attic. He looks at, check every outlet, every socket, you know, the water pressure. And
that's something to check. Water pressure, do your toilets flush, do the lights turn on?
Right.
Like, there's so many things, like, normally you look at a house during the day, so there's things you don't think about.
Right.
Until all of a sudden you're, like, sitting in your house and you're like, crap, why?
Whoa, that light is flickering. Why is that light flickering? And, you know, if you get a good agent who, you know, has a good home inspector on the team, then he'll come in and he'll check every light. And usually they bring light bulbs or they have a multimeter. So, like, if that light is flickering, is it a light bulb or is it something a little bit more pricey? So, you know, if you and I, we'll just change a light bulb. Like, oh, all right. Or it must be the light bulb. That's why.
Yeah.
You know, but he's going to, all right, that light is out. Let me go up there and let me get a multimeter. Let me check the outlet. Let me make sure electricity is coming to it. You know, let me check the breaker, and so forth and so on.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting, like, when you do go look at a house, there's things that you're like, oh, no, I won't care about that because you just want a house. But mm-hmm. then you have to, like, really sit back and think. Like, I remember Kate and I would always, like, you'd be like, okay, I'm going to call you in a couple hours and we'll talk. You know, like, you let us sit there and kind of think about the house before we signed anything. Just in case, like, in a couple hours, we're like, oh, I don't know.
Right.
And it is really interesting, like, when you leave and kind of that rush of adrenaline of, like, seeing the house and wanting it and then seeing other people and you're like, oh, maybe I have to, like, beat them out, you know, like, all that kind of stuff. It, like, subsides and you're like, okay, what did we really like about that or, like, what did we not like? Because I know that there was times where Kid and I were like, we just really want a house. And I was like, okay, but, like, I'm not willing to, like, give up all this just for a house.
Right.
You know? And so it is really interesting, like, what you're willing to negotiate or, like, what's the word? Where you're like, okay, you know, we didn't get 3 bedrooms, but we got a 2-car garage.
Right.
And, you know, you're able to kind of see, like, what's really important for us
right.
versus the things that maybe can slide a little bit. Or, like, hey, I don't really care about the paint color because, like, I'm going to paint my
right.
own, you know? And so it is interesting, like, as a first-time home buyer, like, oh, my gosh, like, this is crazy.
Right. And this is what I would like all first-time home buyers to think about is, the only house that's going to be close to what you want is a custom-built house from the ground up where you're picking every little thing. Of course, that's going to be a little pricey. And even with that, about a year of being in a house, you're going to be like, we should have did this. Or I want this now. Or I don't want this anymore. You know, so I would just say that people, when they go into a house as first-time home buyers, go in there with an open mind. And if it works, don't fall in love with the win. Don't fall in love with the sale. Fall in love with 6 months. What, you know, try to envision 6 months to 5 years after that. Like, will I still be in love with this property? Will I still be like, I can't wait to get home and, you know, put my feet up on the couch in my home, my sanctuary, you know?
Yeah. And I think what's really cool, like, I know that we received a lot of slack, so maybe we can talk about this, like, about California prices mm-hmm. and how expensive it is. But, like, how it really is worth it. So maybe talk a little bit like how, you know, even though it's going to be a lot more money than you'd probably spend in Alabama or
right.
Ohio or North Carolina mm-hmm. or Texas, why is it so good to buy houses in California?
Well, because of it's just a difference between, hey, I'm going to go to the store and go to the car dealership and buy Audi. Mm-hmm. Then when it comes to resellability, it holds its value better. If I was to go, and I'm not knocking on any car maker, if I was to go buy a Kia, you know, fact of the matter is they won't hold their value as good as the Audi would. Mm-hmm. So when we was looking at it for as do we buy a house in California, because of course, you know, I'm from Alabama, my wife is from Georgia, and we compared it to what we know, and then you come here, that was a big deal. But then when you think about return on investment, you know, yeah, this house cost me $500,000, but if I can afford it, I gotta have somewhere to live. Moving right now is not an option, so I'm going to go ahead and buy this house. When I do move, if I was to be renting, I would get my deposit back, $2,000.
Yeah.
If I buy this home, one, my mortgage is probably going to be cheaper than if I was to rent it, because rent is about, you know, goes up every year about 5%. And of course, if a landlord had you in his house, you best believe he's going to charge you enough to cover his mortgage plus a little bit more.
Yeah.
For him to charge you less than what he's paying, then that just don't make sense. He's losing. So rent will be more. So when you leave out a house when you rent, you get your deposit back. When you leave out a house when you buy it, you get all the equity back. And if it's in the state of California, me and my wife have been in the property we have now for 2 years. If we decide to sell right now, we walk away with $250,000.
Which is insanity, because that's how much money you could spend to go buy a house in Alabama.
Exactly. So you just live in this house pretty much for 3 years, 2 years or whatever, and then the proceeds from that house allows you to buy a house otherwhere and don't have to pay mortgage for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you do it the right way. So the value is value in, you know, in the land. That's why sometimes in California you see a house and it don't look like much, but it costs $500,000. You're like, how? Why? Because it's not the structure. It's not the wood and the stucco and the paint. It is the land that it sits on. The earth.
The location.
Where is that?
Yeah.
Exactly. Land is not getting bigger. land is not getting bigger. Actually, due to global warming, if you believe in it, it's getting smaller. Yeah. In 10 years, we expect to lose a foot on all the coastal cities. And most people are like, oh, that's not nothing. But, you know, keep going over time, then it's just going to raise the price of land. So that's why we decided to buy in California, because it is a sure bet. Even when the housing market do something crazy, California on the coastal cities is pretty much, I'm not going to say.
Oceanside's pretty much one of the only coastal cities left that has like decently priced
exactly
things.
Yeah.
I mean, so we bought our house for $525,000, and within 2 months, our neighbor sold their house for $45,000 more in 2 months. Same exact layout, same exact square footage, same exact everything. And it's like wild to me that it can be like that. So as a realtor, I'm sure that you kind of follow market trends. What do you feel like the next year is going to look like in California specifically?
In California, I think that...
Do you think it's going to dip like everyone talks
no,
about?
No, absolutely not. No. I don't think it's going to dip. And I'm not telling you this because I'm in the business of selling and helping people sell and buy homes. I'm actually in the process of buying a home right now. So if I'm doing it, then of course I feel like it is safe to do. What I think is going to happen in the next year, I think that the percentage of growth on equity is going to slow down. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're going to be getting 12% in equity in a year. I think it's just going to slow down. You know, over 2 years, I built up $250,000 in equity. I think in about a year, I may add another $10,000 maybe or $20,000. I don't think it's going to be a point where people are going in bankruptcy and foreclosures because they just lost so much money in the house. The good thing about California, if you can't pay your mortgage, you just sell and walk away with all the money that you gain from your equity. But to answer your question, I think the market is just going to, I think the prices are going to calm down a little bit. I think it's going to level out a little bit. I still think it's going to be a buyer's market, but not to the, you know, not that far to the opposite where you were a seller. I'm sorry, it's going to be a seller's market still, but I don't think it's going to be to the point where they hold all the cards. I think as a buyer, you'll be able to go in and negotiate a few things. Mm-hmm.
So to close real quick about the negotiation, where, cause like, I feel like with our negotiation, you know, like we said we wanted certain things and then you came back and you tried to get them and some of them you're like, okay, Ken's like, is the door really that matter? Is a tub, you know, like, you know, where do you feel like is the line or where is the like happy medium or how do you negotiate things when like both parties aren't budging, you know, like we said, like, no, we want the tub fixed. And they were like, we're not fixing the tub. So as the agent, how do you negotiate to like still close the deal because you want them to have the house, like mm-hmm. we want to have the house, but at the same time, if the seller's not budging and we're not budging, like how do you learn and how did you figure out how to negotiate those terms?
Okay, so it's I actually learned this in the Marine Corps. It's called choice amongst alternatives. So I'll give you an example. You know, if it's my day to cook and my wife come in and she said, hey babe, what are we eating today? Chicken or steak? Then I'm like, okay, we'll eat chicken. Mm-hmm. But if she came in and she just said, hey, babe, we're eating chicken, then I may say, well, I don't want chicken. But she gave me a choice for me to choose from.
Yeah.
So I feel like I was still kind of in control of the situation. So when they say, in this particular situation, like, hey, you guys say, hey, I want the tub fixed. The seller came back and said, we're not fixing it. Then that's when I said, well, let's give them an alternative to fix it. Because they adamant about not fixing the tub. Mm-hmm. Cool. You don't have to fix the tub. Just give us something else we want. And what we want is a home warranty. Mm-hmm. It'll probably cost you about the same amount that it would have cost you. But probably maybe cheaper depending on who you got to do it to fix the tub. So we say, okay, if you don't want to fix the tub, how about you pay for a home warranty? And then they agreed. So that's how you, when you have those stalemates, when you have two people who are like, feet dug in, like, oh, we're not moving, then you just give them another way around, mm-hmm. you know?
No, that's really important. And, okay, so to close, do you feel like there's anything that you're like, all right, this is, that we haven't covered, that you feel like is really important for the listeners to know, whether about the Marine Corps, about real estate, about buying a home, selling a home, anything like that?
I would say the military is one of those professions, career, that is not for everybody. But if it is for you, you will have a life of excitement, pride of belonging. You would feel a sense of accomplishment after every day, after every major event, once you begin to get tired or bored of the routine, the Marine Corps says, or the military says, hey, here, go to Okinawa, Japan, go to Frankfurt, Germany. They send you somewhere else different. And then the excitement of being the new guy and new experiences start all over again. Sometimes that can be, you know, detrimental to your lifestyle if you don't like moving. Yeah. But for the most of us who stick around, we didn't mind the move every 3 years because we got a chance to, you know, do a little travel and adventure. Yeah, exactly.
Which most people probably don't have that same experience or opportunity.
And then when you have kids, you teach them that the world is big. Go out there. Don't be afraid to grab a passport and go. Jump on a flight, you know, and go. So that's what I'll say about the military. The military has, I've earned things that I don't think I would have been able to obtain if I would have, you know, stayed in the civilian world. Not because of the, not from like the monetary stuff, or it's, you know, my college is paid for, I just earned my master's, and all the other benefits that come with it. I'm just talking about the intangibles of changing someone's life, saving someone's life. And on the real estate side of the house, there's nothing better than knowing that you own something from the ground all the way up. It's nothing in this world that would duplicate that feeling that you have a piece of the world. It's like everybody has a part to play, or like having something that's a hot commodity, or, you know, something that's valuable, and you can say like, yeah, all that's valuable, and this is my piece of that. Mm-hmm. You know, so I enjoy coming home every day knowing that this is my home. And now that we have our first property, we want to take what we've learned and take what we've earned from the first property and kind of tweak those wants, needs, and desires. For the next property.
Yeah. Dude, that's so exciting. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on. This is awesome.
No worries.
I learned so much, and I hope the listeners do too. And I just feel like when we bought the house, there was so much that we didn't know. And we're just so grateful that we could trust you, you know? Like, they ask you to sign these papers really quickly, and I'd call you, and I'd be like, can I sign this? And you're like, yeah, I looked it over. It's okay. I'm like, okay, sweet. Thank you. Like, there's just so much you don't know. And so you want to have a real estate agent that cares about you and is in it for you and not for themselves. And so Kate and I are just really grateful that you came into our lives and that you helped us buy our first house.
Thank you. I'm happy that you guys picked up the call.
Well, I hope you loved that episode with Jay. I am so grateful that he took the time to come on, and I'm really grateful for this season. I love that I'm focusing on life, learning, and lessons, and all the different things that me and the people around me are experiencing and that I get to share them with you. I'm excited for the rest of this season before I take off to OCS. And another thanks for Jamarcus coming on and talking about his experience. And as you can tell by listening, his military career was awesome, and now his career as a realtor is taking off. So if you are in the California area, definitely check him out. I will tag him on all the different social medias. Thank you again for tuning in to episode 3 of season 3, and I will catch you guys next Monday.